From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Tom Asbrook, and this is On Point. Teen anxiety, we're told, is on the rise. More teenagers than ever suffering from severe anxiety. Anxiety that can be debilitating. This hour on Point, we're going to look at why and what to do about it. You can join us on air or online where this conversation is always on. Is this you? Is this your teenager, your brother, your sister, your student? What's going on? Join us anytime at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. Joining me now in the studio is Benoit Denizet-Lewis, professor at Emerson College, writer for the New York Times Magazine. His latest piece is headlined, Why Are More American Teenagers Than Ever Suffering from Severe Anxiety? You can link to it at our website, onpointradio.org. Benoit, welcome to On Point.
Thanks for having me.
What got you on to this?
So I read a lot about young people and youth culture in this country. I've been doing that for about 15 years. And I had a connection to go up and visit a treatment center in New Hampshire called Mountain Valley, which treats anxious young people. And I had written a lot about addiction, so I knew that there were plenty of treatment centers for young people struggling with various forms of addiction. But it was a big surprise to me that there was a place devoted strictly to anxiety. So I visited, and I was just amazingly struck by the stories of these kids and the way that anxiety had just completely stopped their lives. And from there, I started talking to teachers, counselors, therapists, mostly teachers and counselors and school administrators who told me, Benoit, I've been – and this is their voice. You know, I've been teaching – I've been here for 15, 20, 30 years. And something profound is happening. I've never seen so many kids struggling to either literally get to school because their anxiety is so high, or if they're in school, to be able to overcome minor setbacks. Teachers kept talking about resiliency. Schools all across the country are sort of obsessed with this word now. How do we teach resiliency? How do we teach coping skills? There's a real sense among so many teachers that those skills have been lost. The question, and it's a very complicated, interesting one, is why, which I'm sure we'll talk about. But there was a real amazing sense from the teachers and administrators I talked to that something very problematic was happening. And then I started looking at the numbers, which one of the problems with anxiety – we don't have as much good data about anxiety as we do about depression. It's hard to compare rates of anxiety in this country to other countries because we don't ask the same questions. We don't formulate the question the same way. Okay. And anxiety, like many things, has a sort of cultural interpretation. So but the numbers that ask, you know, young people, especially incoming college freshmen, over the last 20 or 30 years that asked the same question, right, over a span of 20 or 30 years, those numbers also show kids talking about feeling overwhelmed, feeling overwhelming anxiety, feeling overwhelmed by all I had to do. And so those numbers are pretty stark and pretty compelling.
What kind of increases do they show, those numbers?
Well, they show a broad range. So So anxiety is part of a larger pattern here. I mean, since 2011, the numbers on young people and mental health are really troubling. We're having sort of skyrocketing rates of depression, anxiety, although anxiety has overtaken depression as the main reason that college students seek counseling services. So that's happened in the last decade. We have higher rates of suicide. Hospital admissions for suicidal teens have doubled over the last decade, and the most common month is October, according to a recent study. So that's right after kids come back to school. So the numbers are showing that teens feel overwhelmed by everything they have to do, feeling overwhelming anxiety. And those numbers are pretty stark. And combined with what I heard from administrators and teachers and counselors all across the country, and then the response to this piece, which, you know, I've written 7 cover stories for the New York Times Magazine. Mm-hmm. I've never had this kind of response in terms of teachers and administrators and parents and kids emailing me and talking about how big of an issue this is in their communities or in their schools.
You cite this research done out of UCLA that since 1985 has been asking incoming freshmen if they feel overwhelmed by all they have to do. And in the last year before they get to college, and in 1985, 18% said they felt overwhelmed. Last year, that was 41%. I mean, it's a long time, but that's a gigantic. That's much
it's more than double. So these numbers are compelling, and they're interesting, and they're part of a larger story. We do have to also so I was really interested in numbers, especially this one that asks for it doesn't ask, do you have an anxiety disorder? It asks for symptoms related to anxiety. And to me, those are more telling because there is certainly complicating these numbers is the fact that we talk about anxiety more now. It's something that there's less shame and stigma to talk about around mental health in many areas. So there is that complicates things too. Like how much are kids more anxious, or how much is that more on our radar, mm-hmm. or how much are kids more willing to just say I'm anxious? So that complicates all this. But I like these questions that ask for symptoms related to it, not so much, you know, do you have an anxiety disorder? Even though those numbers are also telling.
I wonder, though, I mean, I don't really know how – is anxiety a medical condition?
So
everybody feels anxious.
Yeah. So here's part of the problem. So one of the experts I talked to who's been researching this for 40 years told me, you know, Benoit, anxiety has an image problem because it's not well understood. So we all have anxiety, right? Anxiety is a normal
sure. – it's natural at
it's
some
natural.
Points.
So for me, I wake up this morning. I'm going to come on the radio with you. Mm-hmm. A little bit of anxiety,
yeah, sure.
right? You know,
yeah.
And then I say, Tom's a nice guy. You know, I'm probably – you know, I've done radio before. I'll be
it's
fine.
It's going to be okay. But
yeah.
There's that moment.
There's that moment. So Jake, one of the guys who I write about sort of helped me understand the difference between sort of normal anxiety and debilitating. So Jake talked about how for him – he says, you know, when you know you're in class and the teacher says, okay, there's going to be a pop quiz and you're not prepared for it, you're not expecting it, and you have that moment of like, oh, great, you know, or maybe you have a tension in your chest or in your stomach.
Mm-hmm.
And Jake said, so that's how a normal person reacts to that. He says, for me, I essentially have that feeling all the time. And he had that feeling all the time over the course of a year. And, you know, an interesting I talked to dozens and dozens of kids for this story and from different backgrounds. And Jake and Jillian are the two that I sort of followed over the course of the year because I met them in Mountain Valley and I was interested in watching their progress as they went through therapy and then tried to return to school because Jake, like so many severely anxious kids, had stopped going to school. And
whoa.
It was anxiety producing because he was actually obsessed with college, with succeeding in school. He was taking three AP classes. School was like his way to feel good about himself, mm-hmm. right? To feel like a success.
And he had been quite successful.
And so for him, this debilitating anxiety hit him. You know, there were signs early in his life, the anxiety, there often are signs at a pretty young age. Sometimes parents miss them.
Mm-hmm.
But Jake had those that was sort of dealt with, thought about, not really. In high school, his junior year, beginning of his junior year, he hits the wall, refusing to go to school. And Jake's parents, like so many parents I talked to, were so confused about what to do. Like, what do you do when you have your kid who suddenly is, you know, a bright, active kid one day, the next, you know, riddled with anxiety, won't go to school. It became very difficult for them and for a lot of other parents to then figure out, okay, do we put them on medication? Do we have to find a therapist who actually knows about anxiety mm-hmm. in a serious way? Many parents struggled with finding help for severely anxious teens.
What do people speculate or understand the reason for this? Is it teens looking out at a world where, oh my God, we're talking about nuclear war with North Korea. We're talking about climate change and everything's going to, you know, burn or flood
right.
or, you know, things. To a lot, plenty of adults, you can say, it seems like things are coming apart at the seams.
Right.
Or is it something else? Is it are they focused on the big future? I'm anxious about the world, or is it more immediate than that? Is it something in the way that we're rearing children now that has to do with this?
So the The short answer is I'm glad we have an hour because it's complicated. And a lot of people will tell you, I've gotten this on Twitter a lot since the piece has come out. Well, you know, offering very simplistic answers. Well, it's Trump, or well, it's our politics today, or well, it's all the fault of parents. And there is this sense, especially among adults, that, you know, well, it's not surprising that kids are anxious. Look at what's happening to the world. Look at the news that they receive all the time. Yeah. So that's a really interesting part of this. And what I struggled with as a journalist in the kids that I talked to, I didn't hear a lot about that. I would ask them those questions, mm-hmm. and perhaps it was because I was talking to a lot of high school kids. Maybe in college that becomes – maybe high school kids are much more just focused on the nitty-gritty of their daily lives. But I didn't hear a lot of sort of existential dread mm-hmm. in the way that adults might assume. Now, that doesn't mean that that's true for every kid, and there are certainly – I talk to kids for kids who – Hispanic youth, poor Hispanic youth living in New York City. I talked to a woman who runs a treatment center up there, focused on anxiety for them and the fear of the fear of the political climate of undocumented family members. Those are incredibly real fears for transgender young people. Incredible anxiety. Anxiety is spiking. So there is a way, certainly, that for some groups of kids, the world we live in is very, very scary. And so that anxiety in a lot of ways sort of makes a lot of sense.
This podcast is sponsored by ZipRecruiter. What if hiring could be easier? So even when you're busy, you can still be smart about how you hire. With ZipRecruiter, you can post your job to over 100 top job boards with just one click. Then their smart technology notifies the most qualified candidates to apply. No wonder 80% of employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate through the site in just one day. Right now, you can post jobs on ZipRecruiter for free. That's right, free. Just go to ZipRecruiter.com/OP. That's ZipRecruiter.com/OP. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about more American teens more anxious than ever and what to do about it. You can join us this hour. Are these students in your school, your classroom, do you see this? Why are American teens more anxious than ever, if these reports are correct? Is it because the world is scarier? Is it something in the way we're raising kids? Is it new pressures, social media, new worries about the future? Do you see it? Do you see it a lot? Benoit Denizet-Lewis is with us. He's just written about this in a big piece in the New York Times Magazine, Why Are More American Teenagers Than Ever Suffering from Severe Anxiety? You can read that at our website, link to it, onpointradio.org. We'll have a couple of psychotherapists, psychologists join us in just a moment with their thoughts on this. The voices of students themselves, young people themselves. Here's Louisa, Seattle, 18 years old. In September, she talked with Seattle's NBC affiliate about her anxiety.
I kind of started really struggling with anxiety my freshman year of high school, and it got pretty bad the first 2 years, and it's kind of balanced out since then, but I still have panic attacks all the time. So it's always been kind of something that I've had to deal with.
Panic attacks. That doesn't sound fun. Here's Annika in Grand Rapids talking with the ABC affiliate there last year.
I experienced pretty severe anxiety throughout the beginning of my high school career, perpetuated by academics, sports, social pressures.
Here's David in Lyme, Connecticut, video from Yale Medicine describing what his anxiety feels like.
It's kind of like a mix of like actual physical pain with just kind of like the mental kind of pain, you know, it's kind of like looking in the sun for a little while, like that.
Like looking at the sun. Does it mean you're doomed? It certainly does not. Here's Michael Phelps, the most decorated Olympian of all time, the great swimmer, opening up about his struggle with anxiety during his youth in the documentary Angst, released earlier this year.
In middle and high school, I was made fun of, bullied, was told I'd never amount to anything. So there were certain things that probably caused a lot of anxiety that I was going through, and then led to massive spells of depression. In 04, 08, 2012, major part in 2014 where I didn't want to be alive anymore. Like, I couldn't look at myself in the mirror and be happy with who I saw.
Michael Phelps, most decorated Olympian of all time, and you hear anxiety so deep he didn't want to be alive anymore. Benoit, lots of reaction from people online here. I mean, Margaret says, why wouldn't they be anxious? Just turn on the news. The disasters, climate change, wars, hate the world scares me too. Fair enough. Jeff writes on Facebook, more aren't suffering from anxiety. We just didn't give a dang about teenagers being anxious before. I'll ask you about that. Emily says, look at the news. Look at what their parents are dealing with. And Angel says, social media exacerbates the issues teens normally deal with. C says, poor diet and lack of exercise. Magnesium and some jumping jacks works wonders. And, you know, on and on. Sean, overpriced higher education, overpriced housing, overpriced health care. If you want to give them hope, throw the top 20% opportunity hoarders under the bus. You can get very quickly into a kind of a political economy discussion here. So there's the condition of the world that they're looking at. There's social media we've touched on just a little bit. And then is there something about the way that children are being treated or raised or looked at these days?
Ben? So those were a really interesting collection of emails because it just goes to the many theories on this. And those who work with anxious kids are going to urge people not to look at this as sort of one cause or one reason. So we just finished talking about how the world is a scary place, and that's certainly a part of it. But I was really surprised at kids from different backgrounds, the commonality of what they told me they were anxious about. And it wasn't those big things. It was how my friends perceive me, social media, bullying, academic pressure that came up a lot, how teachers perceive them. So there were a lot of really interesting questions, and schools are really struggling with this question of these kids. Should we alter the school day in any way? Should we create special accommodations for kids who are anxious? Should we allow them to leave the classroom if they're anxious? Should we create special classrooms for anxious kids? I visited a high school in New Jersey that had a special program for anxious kids where they have teachers and professors texting, calling the kids in the morning, trying to draw them out of bed, sending special buses to get them to school. So that's
that
sort of
weird. I mean, in the old days, the idea of the school calling to help you get out of bed was just like, forget about it. It's not going to happen.
But
kids didn't stay in bed in general. At least we didn't talk about it.
Some kids always have. So there have always been anxious kids. But these schools are seeing a dramatic increase in kids who are refusing to come to school, not because they're lazy or they're just like, I don't want to go to school today, because of overwhelming anxiety. So they're really struggling to come up with questions on this. The social media, we should touch on it just briefly. Mm-hmm. It is fascinating and complicated. More and more studies are showing, and Gene Twenge has a really great book about this, iGen. More and more studies are showing that the more time you spend on screens, the unhappier you are in a number of different ways. And teenagers talk a lot about cyberbullying, about the pressure of posting things on social media. So not only is there that, but there's the flip side of this, which we need to talk about too, which is this idea that when we have our phone in our hand, it's a way to seemingly control our environments. We control when we respond to a text.
Right.
If we respond at all, we control when we post to social media, how we filter. There's a seeming sense of control. And so more and more experts are starting to look at how that fosters a sense of anxiety when teens have to put the phone down and deal with a situation where they can't predict and control the outcome or the situation. And that's increasingly scary for most teenagers. Mm.
I want to turn to Lynn Lyons and Angela Neal in just a moment. A couple of calls first, if I may. Travis in Worcester, Massachusetts. Travis, thank you for calling. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom. Thank you so much. Mm-hmm. I'm coming at this from a couple different angles. I teach freshmen. I've been teaching them for about 12 years. College freshman. I teach media studies, and I also have a middle schooler who just got his first smartphone.
Okay.
Which was a very difficult decision. I've been noticing over these 10 years or so that I am seeing more college freshmen and college students giving me medical absences, anxiety related, psychologically related. They need to take time, depression. And I'm just caught some of the recent comments you made. You said 2011 was when things seemed to spike. And that was my assessment, too, is that, my gosh, these kids are plugged into this artificial environment for so long. Do they not have the ability now to deal with real life as readily because they continually retreat to this controlled environment, which is also, by the way, a very crafty window into the bad news that seems to be out there so much.
So you're looking at the digital realm and social media and all of that as a escape or a counterexample to the messiness of the real world, Travis, but also scary.
Yes, absolutely, absolutely. And it's not so much that worse things are happening right now, and I tell this to my students all the time, it's not that the world is more violent or terrible. It's always been terrible. It's actually been much worse. But the amplification of it consistently into your ear or into your face and not the interaction with the people around you and the wonderful life that might be around you right now can really set you off, you know, and I think even adults feel this to a certain extent, but maybe we're better prepared to deal with it because we didn't grow up with these devices everywhere we went.
Maybe. Travis, let us hold that thought. Every day in your class, you're missing that half dozen students or something like that with an emotional or anxiety reason for that. One more, and we'll go to our psychologist, Scott in Akron, Ohio. Scott, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom. How are you?
I'm well. How about you, Scott?
Good. Well, good. I mean, we're living with a 17-year-old son who for 4 years has been dealing with extreme anxiety and depression. The two are linked.
Okay. How does it manifest, or how has it manifested itself, Scott?
Moments of great despair, not wanting to live, not wanting to go on, not wanting to see a place for them in the future. What's the point of living in a world like this? And, I've had a lot of time to think about it, a lot of time to process and read, and have sat through countless sessions with counselors and therapists and clinicians and,
Have you had, Scott, if I may, have you had the whole school refusal problem with your son's case? Just won't go to school? Or?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And, you try everything from the tough love to, pushing through to getting downright, I don't know. And then nothing works. What you see is just how debilitating anxiety can be. And,
tough.
All the above, and what your guest has mentioned, from video games, it's interesting, the same devices that bring us the news isolate us from society, and I think it's just a lot of all of the above, and what we've seen in our son, it's overexposure to every piece of bad news 24/7, which has an effect. It's video games, it's social media. I want to pose a quick question, then I'll get off.
Sure, Scott.
One thing I see in kids today, my own son and certainly his peers, and it is just a very high level of, I guess you'd call it EQ, emotional quotient. Kids today are very in touch with not only their own feelings, with the feelings of the world around them, people in the world, family, friends. And so there's definitely a heightened sensitivity. I wonder just how that plays into all this overexposure of bad news and isolation, et cetera. I appreciate your time.
Scott, I wish you and your son, your family, very good luck there. If there's any consolation in not being alone, Benoit's delivering it here. You certainly are not, and we wish you the best. And I thank you for your call and your candor right there. Let me take that question up, if I may. First with Lynn Lyons, psychotherapist, clinical social worker, specializes in the treatment of anxiety disorder in teenagers, co-author of Anxious Kids, Anxious Parents, with us from Concord, New Hampshire. Lynn Lyons, thank you very much for being here.
Hi, Tom. Happy to be here.
And with us from Kent, Ohio, is Angela Neal, psychologist. She's at Kent State University, runs the program there for research on anxiety disorders among African Americans. Angela Neal in Kent, Ohio. We were there just last fall and met lots of wonderful people. Angela, thank you for being with us.
Thank you, Tom.
Lynn, can I come first to you? Our caller Scott in Ohio says, maybe kids are just more emotionally attuned, have a higher EQ these days, and therefore more sensitive. Does that make sense to you? How do you explain what's going on with this, what Benoit reports as a surging anxiety problems?
Well, it certainly is a surging anxiety problem. And I think that one of the things that Benoit said that really sort of struck a chord with me is that when you're talking to anxious kids, they're not really talking about the world. They're talking about their lives. And what I see, I've been doing this for 29 years. Mm-hmm. I don't see kids that are sort of happily, flexibly, emotionally equipped moving through their lives and then suddenly hitting high school and coming undone.
Okay.
I think that it is a building. I think that it is a process that develops over a period of time, including childhood. What happens when you hit middle school and high school is that the stakes get higher, particularly socially. So if I'm looking at what really throws kids from, you know, somebody like Jake, who's functioning and getting to school and doing his day, and then he hits junior year in high school and the wheels come off the bus, the ability to manage what life throws at you is a skill that's developed over time. It's a skill that's modeled. It's a skill that's taught. And so if I'm looking at what's really contributing to the suffering of high school kids, and it happens in middle school too, I think we need to step back and, go back farther in the development of families, of parenting. This is a cultural problem in which we are putting so much pressure on kids. Anxiety demands certainty. That's its goal. Anxiety wants certainty and it wants comfort. Throw in the social media stuff, which is, as you were talking about with Benoit, there is this expectation that I'll be able to know everything. I'll be able to get the information I need. And what I'm seeing in my practice and when I'm talking to schools and talking, you know, doing the trainings that I do all over the country, what I'm hearing consistently is that kids are not developing or not being taught the skills they need to manage when things go wrong.
Angela Neal there in Kent, Ohio. Lynn deals with this a lot. I'm sure you do as well. She looks around and says, we have too many young people who are not happily, flexibly, emotionally equipped. Do you agree, Angela? Is there a higher portion that aren't? And if not, why not?
I do. I agree somewhat. One of the things that we have to understand about anxiety is that it's psychobiosocial. So it's not only all these social pressures, but we know that the adolescent brain develops from the back to the front, and the emotional part of the brain is in the center.
Mm-hmm.
And certainly there's research that's also saying with these social pressures, we're also seeing that the front part of the brain and the middle part of the brain, there seems to be a disconnect or a weakening in the connection between those two with anxious teens. And so that ability...
Wait, those two representing what? The front and the back then?
Okay, so the middle of the brain is the amygdala, and then the front of the brain, we're talking about the prefrontal cortex. And so that, which is the part that helps us regulate our emotion,
okay,
helps us make better decisions.
Yeah.
And so that those two, there seems to be some kind of disconnect there.
Why?
So,
why would that be?
Well, I think that's one of the questions that researchers are looking at. I think what's really important for us to understand is that anxiety is complex. So we get the social piece interacting with this biological piece and then interacting with this psychological piece. The good news is that anxiety is treatable and that these adolescents can reclaim their lives.
We certainly see that with Michael Phelps, at least in
Absolutely.
His performance in the swimming pool. I can't attest to the rest of his life. Benoit, you're listening, and we'll hear more from Lynn and Angela. But, you know, we can imagine people saying, well, why would we suddenly not have this connection between front of the brain, back of the brain? Or why wouldn't a new generation be happily, flexibly, emotionally equipped? Has the world changed that much?
Well, so, I mean, those are interesting questions. There's all kinds of researchers looking at that. What I wanted to pick up on is what Angela just said at the end there about that anxiety is treatable. And Lynn can certainly speak to this too. But, you know, it is very treatable, and it's treatable in a way that we don't often – that feels perhaps counterintuitive. So, you know, one of the things that I spent a lot of time thinking about and watching kids do both at Mountain Valley and other places was something called exposure therapy, which is the idea that we are going to lean in and do what makes us afraid.
Face your fear.
Face your fear.
Uh-huh. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about more American teens, more anxious than ever, studies are showing. We're looking at why and what to do about it. Benoit Denizet-Lewis has been writing about it. You can link to his piece at our website, onpointradio.org, professor at Emerson College. Lynn Lyons is with us, psychotherapist, clinical social worker, author of Anxious Kids, Anxious Parents, with us from Concord, New Hampshire. And Angela Neal is here, psychologist at Kent State University, directs the program there for research on anxiety disorders among African Americans. You can join us. Do you see this happening? Do you see it a lot? What's the answer to this? And do we just expose young people to the things they fear? Is that the way to fix it? Or, of course, it's more complicated than that. But what do we do about all this? Lots of responses here. You know, Tom writes to us on Twitter, my own kids and their generation were imposing anxiety on them in so many ways. Rosarita writes, want to know about what causes anxiety in teens? Ask a DACA student. That fear of deportation themselves or someone else. M writes to us, if parents are always hovering and worrying about their children, it sends the message that there's something wrong with them. People thinking about this plenty. Of course, it all depends where you are. Here's a little tape. This is from Delaware Public Media. Mikhail Clark saying that ever since Michael Brown's death in Ferguson, Missouri, his anxieties and fears about police have reached a fever pitch.
I'm already kind of an anxious person. I worry a lot about my dog, my homework, even my sneakers sometimes. But this anxiety is different. It's much different. My palms get sweaty. I have a fight or flight feeling and a big lump in my throat. I feel like I have to be perfect, just to stay alive. But then I get frustrated that I can't just act like myself and be a kid. I want to, like, be safe and know that I can walk around without being nervous around cops.
Anxiety, many, many different kinds of reasons for it. Lots of callers here. Corey in Natick, Massachusetts. Corey, you're on the air. Thank you for calling.
Hey, thank you for taking my call.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm the mother of a child who came to the world with anxiety issues. Social anxiety, it's a genetic issue, but unfortunately the schools just didn't identify her and as having a disability or a need. They recognized that she could not self-advocate, ask to go to the bathroom, and that she started to have some school refusal, but unfortunately the district that I lived in had a residency policy that required the children to all sleep 5 nights in the week in the town, and my daughter was spending more time at her dad's house in Natick. So we had to transition her in fifth grade to go over to a new school district, which was bigger. My daughter couldn't take the school bus because there were too many kids. She couldn't do cheerleading because she just couldn't perform with other children like that. She got to the point where she couldn't ask to go to the bathroom, and she couldn't ask a question in class. And it got to the point where the school in Natick excluded her from attending, saying that because they don't want to pay for special ed services. My daughter had been diagnosed with having general and socialized anxiety by the Boston University Center for Anxiety-Related Disorders. It got to the point where I actually had to take the school district to Superior Court to force them to enroll and educate her.
Did they finally do it, Corey?
Well, they never gave her a 504. Instead, they continued to tell her that she didn't belong in that town, and they wouldn't allow either parent to advocate on her behalf. It got so contentious that my daughter, I was taking her to school, and she became suicidal, and she wrote that she would rather be dead than to go back to that school. So I brought her to the pediatrician. She gets committed to a Franciscan hospital in Boston, a locked unit for 8 days.
Wow.
And she was then diagnosed with a very rare psychiatric condition called select mutism. But she had lost all trust in adults. She spent another 2 weeks in the hospital, and then they had to pay for her to go to a therapeutic school where she had more anxiety because she was mute at that point.
Yeah.
She couldn't
mute. Couldn't speak. Wouldn't speak.
She went mute.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And she.
Are you hopeful, Corey, that she'll pull out of it? What does the future look like to you?
Let me tell you what the future looks like. I finally pulled my daughter from public school. I homeschooled her. The cognitive behavior therapy did not work for my daughter, although the exposure part of it did a little bit help. But what we found to be very successful was neurofeedback and this device called VAUD, and it is a bio-autological feedback that works similar to EMDR, and that was amazing. My daughter wanted to go to a small private parochial school, Marion High, in Framingham, Massachusetts, and she could not. She had dry heaves the morning of an interview. She did this BOD therapy, and she was able to not only go on the interview, but the principal, John Ermelio, said he would never have known that she came from a therapeutic school or that she had any type of anxiety issues.
Corey, we're glad you found some path of hope there. But Lynn Lyons, you're listening to that. I mean, you can see when it gets really bad, it can get just overwhelming. Corey looks at this as genetic.
Right.
What about that, born with versus acquire quality?
So there's a lot of things in that story, and a lot of things that sort of break my heart and make me feel frustrated, because what was going on with this little girl was not at all unusual. Selective mutism is actually not all that rare. Social anxiety is not rare at all. And this really comes, it sort of amplifies what I go around talking about all the time, is that this is a treatable thing. There is a genetic push to some anxiety disorders, but even with a predisposition, if you get good treatment, if somebody identifies this and somebody who knows what they're doing steps in and helps, you can save a lot of horrible suffering like this family went through. And although I appreciate so much talking about the why of anxiety, I really think that the conversation with schools and with families and with therapists really needs to focus on how we help kids that are showing signs of anxiety before it becomes so debilitating. And even when it is debilitating, how do we offer what are really, just as Angela was saying and Benoit was saying, anxiety is treatable. If you're an expert in it, if you get good training in it, you know what works. And unfortunately, this went on for years and years without good, solid treatment, it sounds like.
I want to look at some different kinds of treatment, but I've still hung up on what you said about how, you know, we expect that young people will come up happily, flexibly, emotionally equipped. I mean, we'd like to picture that. And you say too many are not. The skills they need are not being modeled or taught. This sounds like a really serious rupture somehow in the transmission line, you know, from one generation to the next of how to cope and get along. Why would that be broken?
I'm not exactly sure why it would be broken. What I see in the treatment that I do with families, and I work with families, is a shifting in parenting that has to do with making sure that everything is certain. And I think, again, if we talk about safety crutches, a cell phone is an enormous safety crutch. The expectation that I will know exactly what my child is doing, that my child can know exactly where I am. Parents getting online, and I have two teenagers myself, so the fairly recent advent of being able to go online in schools and not only see what your kids' grades are, but see when they turned in a homework assignment. All of this attention is really getting in the way of kids developing. Let me say this. There are three things that we see in anxious families that the research shows pretty clearly. Three skills that kids don't have. One is that they're not very good at tolerating uncertainty. They really are lacking in independent problem solving. And their ability to be autonomous, when we measure that, is lower than we'd like to see.
So give them more free rein.
Give them the ability to screw up in a loving, supporting environment, which, of course, is the ideal. Not every kid has that. But how do we let them learn to manage when things don't go the way they go, that they want them to go? So, for example, as Benoit was talking about, school stepping in and saying, if we have an anxious kid, let's make sure that they know exactly what's going to happen during their day. Well, the anxiety disorder says, oh my gosh, thank you so much for your help, because that's exactly what I need. Rather than saying, let's offer you experiences where things don't go the way you expect them to go, and yet you develop the skills, you develop the ability to manage it. So a lot of this has to do with giving kids, like you say, giving kids room to experience things, and then letting them develop the confidence, the ability to manage. And when I walk into schools, that's mm-hmm. not what I'm seeing.
Angela Neal, I mean, you're dealing with African-American kids and their anxiety.
Mm-hmm.
Now, of course, that describes a wide range of kids from many different kinds of backgrounds. But the tape we just heard there was a young man who has very real, it's not, he doesn't have exposure. He has, in a way, too much exposure to threatening circumstances in some of the neighborhoods in which some of these kids may live. I mean, is this about being too pampered or being too threatened?
Well, I think what we're seeing with black children is that with social media, you get to see things over and over and over again. So things like Eric Garner, Mike Brown, Tamir yeah. Rice. I mean, we see them being shot, being killed over and over again. And we know that fear can be, we know that anxiety can be transmitted vicariously. And we see this regardless of socioeconomic status of our black males and females. Mm-hmm. There's an organization called Jack and Jill of America. And at a recent teen conference town hall, many of these young men stood up who were children.
This is kind of an achievement organization.
It's a service organization.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yes.
It's a service organization. Many are children of doctors, lawyers, upper middle class African Americans. And their biggest concern, their biggest fear, and fear and anxiety are not the same thing, so I have to be careful about mm-hmm. that. But their biggest concern and what they became very anxious about was, I could end up like Mike. I could end up like Tamir. Is somebody going to shoot me too, just like the young man?
Oh.
And that creates this anxiety for these adolescents. I also have to say, I agree. Instead of talking about why, it is so important that we talk about how we can help these adolescents and the treatments that are out there and the education that is out there for parents and for schools. One of the things we see in our work is that the kids know that something's wrong, but they don't have a name for it. So just being able to label it as anxiety, and the most common form of anxiety is a panic attack, and as panic attacks, and it's being able to say these symptoms of a panic attack are this, this, and this. So once you have this panic attack, when you have symptoms that are similar to it, you think you're having a panic attack, and so you panic. When in reality, it might be that you just walked up a flight of stairs and are winded, or that something happened. You saw somebody who looks really good and your heart start to beat fast.
Angela Neal, stand by there in Kent and Lynn. Benoit, you saw this exposure therapy. How does it work? And is this the answer to everybody? I mean, some people may just live in environments where they've got too much exposure.
Right. So and Lynn can speak a little bit about this if it's the answer for everybody. For a lot of the kids, most people who research anxiety and how to treat it are big believers in exposure therapy. Medicine, SSRIs could actually be very helpful as well for a number of kids. Not all. Exposure therapy doesn't work for all kids either. So
What's exposure therapy? Like, you're afraid of spiders, so throw a spider on the bed? I don't know.
So I'll talk about it in terms of what I witnessed for dealing with kids with social anxiety. So it would be for Jake, who was really afraid of, was obsessed, panicked about college. He had to go with the support of therapists on the campus of Dartmouth College near where Mountain Valley is and go up to strangers and say, I didn't have the grades to get into Dartmouth, and to deal with that awkwardness. But you're both going up to a stranger and talking about mm-hmm. nonsensical things.
Mm-hmm.
I kids there had to go up. One had to go up to a stranger in Walmart, knock the man's hat off, walk away without apologizing, because he was so – he was so it's
– Is this serious treatment? This works?
This works. So now it doesn't work on the first time, but it's gradual, and perhaps Lynn can speak to that. But it's about tolerating distress and uncomfortable feelings and learning that you can get through that. It also – for someone with OCD, it might mean walking around with a therapist and touching every garbage can on a street.
The thing they most hate to do. Lynn Lyons, we've got 1 minute and too much to take on board here. But fundamentally, what do we need to be doing to help this generation?
Well, I think we need to be doing exposure in clinical ways and exposure in getting through the day ways. And what exposure really allows you to do, just as Benoit said, is to step into a situation and realize that you can manage it. The thing I say to kids all the time is it is okay to say to your anxiety, to your worry, I don't like it, but I can handle it. And if we keep giving kids the message that it is wrong or that it is dangerous to step into discomfort and uncertainty, then we're feeding this anxiety thing. So it's all about stepping in, being able to manage it, being able to feel uncomfortable, being able to not know, and still being okay.
It sounds like a good formula, and not an easy road.
An easy road, but a very possible road for sure.
Yeah, and one that a whole lot of people, young people, are going to have to walk down to find the ease in this world that we all need to live ultimately. Lynn Lyons, in Concord, New Hampshire, author of Anxious Kids, Anxious Parents. Thank you very much for being with us this hour.
My pleasure.
Angela Neal at Kent State University. Thank you so much for joining us, Angela.
My pleasure.
And Benoit Denizet-Lewis, for all your reporting on this, your terrific writing on this. Listeners, you can read it at our website. Thank you very much, Benoit. Thanks for being here. I'm Tom Ashbrook. Good luck, everybody. This is On Point.